So imagine you've been hearing about this new preacher who has come to town, a preacher who draws larger and larger crowds each week. He is young, charismatic, and heretical. His message upsets people, including your own minister. Week after week, attendance at his congregation grows. It grows so much that the services have to be moved to a theater downtown just to hold the crowds. You cannot understand why he is so popular. You've heard that he doesn't talk about heaven or hell. He doesn't preach salvation. He doesn't even preach about God or Jesus. What on earth would he have to talk about, you wonder? So you decide one morning to skip your own church service and slip into the back of that downtown theater. You go just this once to see what everyone is talking about. Your heart races as you arrive that morning. You worry that someone will recognize you, and you feel a little guilty for not attending your own church that morning. All around you, you notice an excited buzz in the arriving crowd. Everyone feels the same sense of anticipation. It is the autumn of 1917, and you enter the Garrick Theater in downtown Minneapolis, Minnesota. You and hundreds of others have come to hear the Reverend John Dietrich preach his gospel of humanism. You are here to dip your toe in this pool of heresy. You find a seat and excitedly wait for the service to begin. Born in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania in 1878 and raised in the Calvinist tradition of the Dutch Reformed Church, John Dietrich went to seminary and began his ministerial career at St. Mark's Memorial Church in Pittsburgh. As a Christian minister, he was a popular and charismatic preacher, but one who liked to introduce changes into the liturgy and to modernize things. And this did not sit well with some of the members of his congregation, and they accused him of Unitarianism. Upon his ejection from the Dutch Reformed Church, Dietrich accepted fellowship in the American Unitarian Association and began further developing his theology of humanism. He was called to the First Unitarian Society of Minneapolis on November 1, 1916. As Chris Wilcox puts it in an article in the UU World, Dietrich drew large crowds in Minneapolis, so large that services had to be moved downtown to the Garrick Theater. Thousands more heard his sermons by radio. Dietrich, along with contemporaries Reverend Curtis Reese and Dr. Charles Potter, was at the center of an expanding humanist movement emergent from American Unitarianism, which claimed roots in Western and Eastern traditions from Renaissance theologians to Confucius. She goes on to say, Dietrich saw humanism not as a rejection of religion, but as a critical shift of emphasis from a supernatural being to human beings, from the promise of an afterlife to the wonders and challenges of this life. In many ways, the world has changed greatly in the last 100 years, and in many ways, it has not changed that much at all. The 20th century saw incredible advances in science and technology, medicine and public health, and it also saw 2 world wars, the second of which culminated in nuclear warfare and dozens of smaller wars. It saw incredible advances worldwide in civil rights for women, people of color, and sexual minorities. And it saw horrific ethnic cleansing that pitted neighbor against neighbor, destroying countries and killing millions. The 20th century saw American Christianity veer in two directions simultaneously, resulting in both the social gospel movement and in the Christian right. That was me as a little kid. The acknowledgement of other world religions made the religious left in America more tolerant in the 20th century while making the religious right more reactionary. In 1917, Dietrich and his contemporaries could not have known the advances or the horrors humankind would face in the new century, but they were certain an immortal, invisible, omniscient, all-powerful, supernatural entity was not going to intervene in human affairs. Human affairs were up to humans to manage. After a century of change, Chris Wilcox says, humanism has been enlarged by challenging ideas like liberation theology and feminist thought, scientific breakthroughs and seismic cultural shifts. It has been humbled by human failures and learned to make room for doubt and awe, while holding to Dietrich's belief that responsibility and possibility in human life are located here and now within us. Now, one of the things that I value most about Unitarian Universalism is its theological diversity. On any given Sunday morning, it is really fine for atheists and theists, humanists and agnostics, Christians and pagans, Jews and Buddhists to sit together here in our pews. That's you all on any given Sunday morning. The church staff proudly claims a diversity of theological opinion, too. You should hear some of our conversations as we plan these services. At First Parish in Concord, we are not faking theological diversity. We are not pretending to let some folks in so that we can change their minds. We are not putting up with some folks, hoping they will either convert or leave. The theological diversity here is real, and it is one of our greatest strengths. Because we have gotten past theological arguments, we can put our energy towards something more productive. This radical acceptance of theological diversity makes you use really good interfaith partners. We're often the bridge builders in those organizations. Yes, we are Unitarian Universalists, and that is a real and distinct theological position. And we are open to valuing other faith traditions as well. It does not diminish us one bit to work with Muslims or Jews or Christians. It does not diminish us one bit to be in the company of Baha'is or Hindus or Mormons. Our ability to open our Unitarian minds to humanism a century ago has resulted in open minds today. Imagine my surprise as a young adult when I walked into First Unitarian Church of Portland, Oregon, one Sunday in September of 1991. Knowing the Presbyterianism of my childhood was not big enough for me anymore, I was on a religious quest. I figured I would try out the Quakers, the United Church of Christ, and this oddball thing I'd heard of called Unitarianism. I figured I might as well get the weird one out of the way first, right? Just makes sense. So I was prepared to be turned off by First Unitarian. I was prepared to find it so outlandish that I could easily just move on to the others in my quest, having said, well, that was interesting. The trouble was, it wasn't outlandish at all. While it clearly wasn't a Christian church, it didn't seem to be an anti-Christian church either. Where was I? As the service progressed, I became more confused, but in a good way. I heard some nice poetry that morning and a sermon, the topic of which I can't recall. We sang some songs from a tattered old red hymnal, and the minister did a meditation. I don't think the word God was mentioned once, but the word mission came up over and over again. The word mission came up over and over again. Clearly, these wacky Unitarians were interested in the world and in making it a better place. While their theology seems to be all over the place, their commitment to social justice were clear. Who were these people? Why did they come to church? What held them together? I figured I would have to come back the following week to find some reason to reject them. Week after week, I kept expecting to find something about this Unitarianism that would turn me off and send me elsewhere. Week after week, what I found was an incredible consistency between the beliefs people professed and the ways they lived their lives. What I had found in First Unitarian Church was an historic congregation that had figured out how to let its humanism be wide enough to allow even a 20-something former Presbyterian in. Humanism invites us into compassionate connection with others, says Reverend Kendall Gibbons, minister of All Souls Unitarian Church in Kansas City, Missouri. Compassionate connection with others so that we may build the common good and in that enterprise make our own days glad. Humanism offers us no assurance of divine love or of a life to come, but rather the assurance that this life matters and that we create our meaning here and now in this very world. She says, humanism teaches us to find our satisfactions in work and service, rest and love, and to accept our fears and failures for what we may learn from them. Think back to your first experience with Unitarian Universalism. What brought you to it? How did you find it comfortable? How did you find it challenging? What allowed you to stay? Did you experience that compassionate connection with others that Kendall Gibbons lifts up? Because you see, not all churches are welcoming, and not all UU churches are welcoming either. Theological disagreements and turf wars erupt from time to time in all churches, including this one. But if theological diversity can be our common ground, we will weather whatever comes. If you had been in the Garrick Theater one Sunday morning during the autumn of 1917, you would have heard a passionate preacher with a new message. You would have been surprised and delighted to hear him proclaim the agency of man. You would have nodded enthusiastically as he asked the congregation to care more for their fellow creatures than for salvation. You would have looked around and smiled as the gathered crowd resolved to make religion work here on earth. You would have left the service that day, maybe never to return to your own church, or maybe to try and change that church just a little bit. No matter your decision, you would have been changed by the declaration of humanism as a true religious path. You would have been changed by its realism and its optimism. Neither you nor the preacher could have predicted what would happen in the coming 100 years, just as we cannot predict such a thing today. But you would have walked out of that theater on a bright autumn day, and you would have noticed more vividly the colors of the trees. You would have heard more clearly the honking of the migrating geese overhead. You would have smelled more pungently the earth preparing for winter. You would have tasted more sweetly the last tomatoes of the garden. That Sunday after church, you would have been aware of how very alive you were, a creature among creatures. You would have thought of your own birth and your own death, imagining all that would happen between them. There in the waning light of the shorter days, you would have given thanks for all that was your life. You would have knelt down, not in supplication, but in thanksgiving for family and friends, for work and love, for rest and joy, for tomorrow already on its way. Kneeling in the abundance of those fallen leaves, you would have whispered to the universe, "Thank you." And as the stars came out, one by one, they would have whispered back, "You are welcome." So be it. Amen.